The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia. Visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
What's going on, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the State of the Nova Nation podcast presented by VU Hoops. I'm Emma Houghton, he's Pat Zhang, and Pat, we are coming at you with the week of all weeks. Finally, it is here. The Big East tournament starts tomorrow. As you are listening to this episode, we couldn't be more excited. We are so excited, especially about the episode today, because we have an incredible guest coming on to preview the entire tournament. Literally no stone is left unturned after this interview that you will listen to. But Pat, just setting the scene a little bit, Villanova dropped its final regular season game of the year, 71-59 to UConn. Would have been nice, momentum-wise, to end the year with a flourish. But as we established many weeks, months ago, this was not a must-win situation for Villanova. So not the end of the world that they dropped this one against one of the better teams in the conference.
A rough performance for sure on Saturday, especially offensively. Things just never got going. And then UConn was able to hit the shots that they needed to in order to come away with it at Wells Fargo. As you said, in my mind, I don't think this really changed things for the Cats, because I think an at-large bid has been out of the question for them for a while, even with the stretch that they had gone on. So we all know what needs to happen. You got to win 4 games in 4 days at Madison Square Garden and cut down those nets if we want to see Villanova in the NCAA tournament.
We flirted with the idea of it being anything else, but when it comes down to it, this is what it probably has always.
It's because we wanted to believe. You wanted to believe that they could get it as an at-large.
They made it a possibility.
They did. They certainly did.
So looking back on the season, we're going to be spending a lot of time recapping the entire season when the season does come to a close at some point coming up in the future. But they finished with a winning record, 16-15 in the regular season, 10-10 in the Big East, which I actually think is what KenPom predicted before conference play started, and we kind of scoffed at that. But KenPom was right, as he always is.
We love KenPom.
10-10. I think when you look back at some of our earlier episodes, very early in the season, some of the panic that was rising throughout the season, how do you feel about 10-10? I'm still not sure where I lay, to be totally honest with you.
I'm still annoyed by 10-10 because I think this team is better than that. And you just think of the DePaul and the Butler losses as the ones that really stand out for you. God, we all wish that Justin Moore could have been here from the start of conference play and wonder how things would have changed. But even with that, you know, I think they had a couple extra wins. Villanova was not going to overtake some of the top end teams this year, regardless in things. The fact that they even clawed to 10-10 after some of the stretches that they went through is probably a positive sign. So I think they made some steps this year, especially in conference play. Obviously, it's not how we wanted to see things play out, but what it's done is, at least as we go into the Big East tournament here, it hasn't set up the worst run-in at the Garden, but still obviously not an easy one.
Yeah, so with that being said, we are going to give way to our fantastic interview with Matt St. Jean of The Road to the Garden. He is going to go down every single avenue that you could possibly think of. We're so happy to have him on, and let's listen to that right now. All right, so we are now joined by Matt St. Jean, the co-founder of The Road to the Garden, the co-host of The Road to the Garden podcast. I was thinking today, the thought struck me that Our first guest of the season was Tommy Godin, also from the Road to the Garden. And our last guest of the season will be Matt St. Jean. So we're booking with Road to the Garden host, which I think is very emblematic of this season and our coverage of the Big East in general. But we're so glad you're here. Year has been like for you covering the Big East and a really exciting season that it was. And Providence guy, everybody that's listening knows my Providence roots. So I'm so happy to have somebody like you on to talk a little bit about the Friars. But thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Ever since I listened to that episode with Tommy, I've been wanting to make an appearance. So I'm glad I could jump on. This season has been a wild ride. Road to the Garden is the spinoff of the old SB Nation site, Big East Coast Bias. We got shut down about 2 months before the season started. So there's been a lot of chaos this year, just getting everything set up. But the season's been a lot of fun figuring that out along the way. And I think it's the learning process of the season is always the most interesting thing to me, where you start to figure out who teams are and how they match with the preseason expectations, and the story that is Marquette this year, the story that has been UConn basketball, the story that has been Villanova basketball. All of these have been incredibly interesting all year long to follow. And Providence, pretty interesting season too, although, and not ending the regular season as I'm sure anybody would have wanted.
A senior night to remember for the wrong reason, for PC, for sure, for what happened over the weekend. But, you know, you talk about Road to the Garden, and I think you guys have done an awesome job this year. I especially love listening to the late night recaps that you put out with the many, many Big East games that go throughout the season. So if you are not familiar with Matt, Tommy, the whole crew over there, Ryan as well, please check them out because they are fantastic.
Thank you. I appreciate that. We do spend a lot of hours streaming this year. I think we're might be the only podcast that talks about every single Big East game, and there are a lot of them.
Oh, yeah. So would love to hear a little bit about how you got your start, really, to where you are right now. So tell everyone how everything that has kind of led into it.
Yeah, I was a Providence College class of 2020. So same year as you guys. And so freshmen signed up to do a radio show talking about sports. They said they had openings to do commentary for the basketball game. So I jumped on that, got to go to the Big East tournament as a freshman, and picked up the lead color job covering Providence men's basketball on the radio, and did that for the next 3 years of college. It all ended at Madison Square Garden when the world ended, and we were there for that. And still wanted to keep talking about the Friars, ended up starting a podcast talking about Providence with my former radio co-host Joe Howie, and joined Big East Coast Bias to start writing about the whole conference. And did that for a little bit. That folded. We switched over to Road to the Garden, and I've kind of widened my lens as the years have gone on here to cover the whole conference and not just Providence, and look at all, it was 10, now 11 teams in the Big East, and talk about what's going on.
Yeah, I remember talking to Tommy about the prep that he did. Both of you and all the people, I'm sure, having full-time jobs, finishing that, watching 3, 4, 5 Big East games a night, and then recording for an hour or two after all those games end. So I can't even imagine what that prep looked like. Are you ready for the season to be over? Are you upset that it's over? Where's your stress level at this point?
Yes. We're going to be at MSG all week long, and it's going to be amazing. And I'm going to want to take a very long nap once that is over. I think once the season's over, I might look to get away for a week and go on a little vacation. Shout out to my girlfriend for having the patience to be there for all of this. I'm very glad that she is willing to watch this much basketball with me.
That's awesome.
As you reference in your Twitter bio, I mean, Tommy calls you a superhero, and I think you are with everything that you go through for all the content you guys pump out.
Well, I appreciate that. Hey, I have the dual monitor set up here in my office, and more often than not during the season, I got two basketball games on at the same time, and just trying to absorb as much as I can.
So cool. So cool.
It's the way you got to do it.
Yeah. Especially with, I think, one of the more underrated storylines this season that people won't necessarily pinpoint right away is how good this conference has been, despite Villanova's weakness for the first 3 months of the season, just discarding the last season, really. So you mentioned Marquette a little bit. I thought you, in the article that you put out on Monday with your power rankings, you mentioned the point differential. And I thought that was fascinating of where teams, or it wasn't point differential, but like expectation differential.
It's the efficiency margin differential.
Yeah, which thank
I think
you.
For KenPom, it's like it's points against an average opponent on a neutral floor over a 100 possession game or something like that. I think that's what
yeah.
it equates.
So talk
to.
A little bit about that, because it's basically the biggest surprises of the season, to put it in simplest terms.
Yeah, which I think the funniest thing about that is that by just the absolute value of how much teams have changed compared to preseason expectations, the biggest surprise in the Big East is still Georgetown being as bad as the team has been. They are the furthest off from preseason expectations, which is kind of remarkable because that team actually got more talented in the transfer yeah. portal over the offseason. But yeah, the flip side of it being Marquette at the top. And I felt like I was higher on Marquette than a lot of people, and I still had them eighth in my preseason rankings. I don't think anybody saw this coming except, I guess, Tyler Kolek.
Yeah.
So it's been fascinating to watch. And you mentioned, like, Jay Wright not being in the Big East anymore. Kind of this power vacuum of, all right, who's going to be the coach? Who's going to be the figurehead? And I think we've kind of emerged with five of them.
Yeah.
Shaka Smart is fantastic. We all know who Ed Cooley is as a leader. Greg McDermott has done fantastic stuff at Creighton, even if that's been maybe a little bit underwhelming this year. When you look at Sean Miller at Xavier, Dan Hurley at UConn, Big East has five teams with the potential to make noise in March at a minimum, and Villanova isn't one of them. The fact that the conference has turned it around, has found such great coaches and leaders, people who are great leaders on and off the floor too, I think is an important part of that for these guys, culture builders. That's what sustains success for a long time. I'm not worried about any of those five programs really slipping at any point because of the coach. As long as the coach is there, I think they're going to be good, which makes life much more difficult for the other six teams in the Big East.
Yeah, and you can throw Shaheen Holloway in there playing with house money this year too.
Yeah, and Kyle Neptune to a point there too. I mean, it's his first year and he didn't get to pick the roster, so
No, very true. I love where you went with the coaches there, because when you talk about the Big East, you can't tell the story of the Big East with all the historic coaches that have been through this conference over the years. And we've got a damn good crop right now on top of it, too. Now, of course, I know we'll always go back to the Massiminos, the Boeheims, the Patinos, on and on and on. But you look at the current crop, from Shaka to McDermott to Miller to Cooley to Hurley, there's so much coaching talent in there right now. It's no surprise that these teams are able to establish themselves, because a lot of it really does trickle down from the top, and the top is so talented in this conference.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that's important too is, like, love him or hate him, everybody has an opinion on Dan Hurley. Mm-hmm. Love him or hate him, everybody Amen. Has an opinion on Shaka Smart. Those are two guys who are very energetic and annoying to play against if you're an opposing fan, that's for sure, just with the way their teams that play and the way they're going to act on the court and all that. And that's great for the conference. You know, we talk about the great coaches of the history of the Big East. A lot of those guys weren't liked in their time. We talk about them because they played the villains so well, and the Big East has that too, which is this whole thing. We like it. We like the drama. We like the stories of sports, and the Big East has that with the coaches too. It's not just the talent, which it makes it fun.
That's well said. Yeah. All right. So speaking of coaches and players themselves, this was award week. Over the past few days, the awards have come out for the All Big East Conference teams. Freshman of the Year, Coach of the Year, Player of the Year will be coming out after we record this podcast and put it out. But I think for maybe the first time ever, at least in recent memory, there has been pretty unanimous support for the picks, which almost never happens. I really haven't seen a whole lot of backlash over snubs or, oh, this guy definitely should have been on the first team. Matt, do you feel the same way? We're not going to list off every single player. You can find it all over Twitter and on BigEast.com, pretty much every Big East publication. But generally, do you feel like the coaches got it right?
Yeah. I mean, there's no, we're at the point where it's nitpicking of, like, did this guy deserve to be unanimous or not? Or should they have been second team or honorable mention? And I think there are good players that are left off the list, but you can't really argue that any of them should have been above the guys that were above them. Like, it's crazy. Part of that, I think, is due to the talent in the Big East and the way the season settled out too. It makes it a little bit easier to discern some of these things. And the fact that you kind of had two dominant big men all year. All right, you know who's going to be on the first team. You can't leave Joel Soriano off and then pick one of the other big men, and he's going to be on that second team. And the guards, too. I think what's crazy is that the first the preseason first team guards, Jared Bynum and Posh Alexander. You're not finding them anywhere on the list when that was released. So, and that's because I think there was an open question as to who the good guards in the Big East were going to be before the year. And that question has been answered. We all know who the good guys are, and it made it easy to fill this stuff out. I mean, you're splitting hairs between like whether or not Baylor Shireman should be higher or things like that. Like and it's not like the SEC where there's eight players on the first team either.
No, I think you nailed it too. It's tough to argue with anything. Even so, like you look at an Iguodaro and a Soriano, and I think those are probably the most hard pressed guys to find themselves on the second team. But can you put them ahead of a Sanogo, a Kalkbrenner, a Hopkins? I'm not sure you can. So I think it's more of a product of the sheer talent that's in this conference here. Otherwise, as you said, it's really hard to argue. And for Villanova, just for us to make that mention, Eric Dixon did make the all-conference second team. And then if we look to the all-freshman team, Mark Armstrong and Cam Whitmore did join those squads.
Yeah, my one thing, and of course the argument is you have to take somebody off if you're going to add somebody in. That's the stump argument. You can't just say this guy deserved to be there because you have to take somebody off, and that's the big issue. Cam Whitmore's non-existence on the first or second team, do you think that's more so because of performance or the fact that he missed the first seven games of the season with that injury?
I think it's injury, and I think it's just inconsistency.
Yep.
Cam Whitmore is a fantastic player, but a lot of it happens in flashes, in spurts, and I guess you could make a comparison to a guy like an Andre Jackson in that regard too. Andre Jackson is a guy who also has the talent and the ability to be first team all Big East. Just didn't do it consistently enough. He also missed time. Cam Whitmore weren't going to be a lottery pick and he were going to stick around next season. I'd be betting a lot of money on him being first team all Big East. That's for sure.
Yeah. The slow start. I think that all adds into it too. I just think talent wise, he's probably more raw talented than a lot, almost maybe all the guys listed. It's just that inconsistency. I feel the same way.
If we're talking talent for the best players in the Big East, probably what he and Bryce Hopkins as the top two guys. And Hopkins is basically a redshirt freshman with the lack of experience he got at Kentucky. He's older. He has more college experience than Whitmore. And I think you see that in just the difference in production between the two players. It's not a slight on Whitmore at all.
Great.
I agree. Obviously, it took him a little bit of time to get going here. He did play in the entirety of conference play, but it was still slow for him at the beginning. Inconsistencies there. I have no problem with him not making either of those teams. He's in the running for Big East Freshman of the Year. He certainly may win that on Wednesday. You know, between him, Klingon, I really like the season AJ Storr put together, but I don't think he's going to take home that award. So I think Cam's still going to get honored in some way. He at least is on the freshman team, but for me, it wasn't enough to make a second team.
Yeah, and he and Caravan were both unanimous selections for the all freshman team. I think top freshman's going to be one of them. Flip a coin on who it's going to end up being. True. They both have really good arguments for it, and I don't think you can go wrong with the pick.
No, I don't either.
Yeah, it feels like those three awards, coach, player, freshman of the year, have kind of lengthened themselves a little bit. Shaka Smart has kind of run away with it. I felt like Tyler Kolick ran away with it as Marquette got better and better down the stretch and picked up some key wins. Really, that win over Creighton on the road, I think, sealed it for him. And Alex Caravan's consistency over the course of the season. Again, the talent point that we just mentioned. You give the tick in the box of Whitmore there, but Caravan did it for the entire season. So those are my three picks there.
Yeah, and we actually just talked about this on the Road to the Garden podcast. And we broke out this whole discussion. I picked Caravan, Tommy picked Whitmore, Chris the Dingo who comes on
Tommy?
Our show.
Shocking.
Yeah, I know.
We love it, Tommy.
Yeah. Chris picked Cam Whitmore. We broke down the whole discussion. It's basically, which do you value more, the splashes and the impact we saw from Cam Whitmore, or I think the in-season development of Alex Caravan? And I think Whitmore is more important for Villanova in some ways because he's the most talented player on the team by a wide margin.
Yeah.
But Caravan plays a role, and it's just, I don't know, it's a style thing. Which one do you prefer from your player?
Certainly, as we're looking forward for when that award comes out. Shifting our look then to the bracket, which potential matchup or matchup on Thursday are you most looking forward to? I have a feeling I know what your answer is going to be based on your history, but it gives you an opportunity just to go in for it.
I mean, there isn't really a better matchup that day than Providence UConn. And there's some other ones I'm really looking forward to on Thursday, even some sleepers that day that I think could be interesting. But Providence UConn is a historic rivalry in the Big East. They haven't played in the Big East tournament since 1998. First time in my lifetime they're going to meet in the Big East tournament, which is crazy. And, you know, it's the two fan bases that are close. You know there's going to be a lot of fans there. It's going to be a great environment. Dan Hurley and Ed Cooley have a history, too, from when Dan Hurley was at URI. So it's two fan bases that don't like each other, two teams that don't like each other. And neither game between the two this season was close. We had a 12-point Providence win in Providence. I think it was nearly a 20-point UConn win. I don't remember what the actual margin ended up being when they played at UConn. So I don't think anybody knows what's going to happen, but I think we're all very interested to see what it's going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a lot of weird shaking out, but that was the matchup we all thought was going to happen. And then Providence was looking really good into the three, and now they're the five. And for Villanova fans, I'm psyched that one of them is going to knock each other out, because I don't really want to play either of them.
Yeah. Shakes out nicely for the Wildcats, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I like the actual timing of it with being the 2:30 game, too, because the noon, I've been there many times. It can be a little sleepy in terms of atmosphere for it. People still getting ready. You got to get into the garden early. 2:30. I think people are going to be geared up. You've got two East Coast-based fan bases, two of the larger, more raucous fan bases as well in the conference. We know the rivalry that goes into it. And talent-wise, I think the matchup's awesome. I cannot wait for the UConn-Providence game on Thursday afternoon.
And there's something special about it being like the 2:30 game on a weekday too. Yes. Like that feels like a March Madness game.
It does.
Like you just see big basketball in that time slot, and you hear the CBS theme song playing in your head. I know this is all on Fox, but
almost CBS time.
almost.
No, that's cool. All right, so I'm gonna really get into it here, and I'm gonna give you kind of a lengthy question here, but during the season, the top five of the conference really emerged and separated themselves. Providence and Villanova have both made it a little closer as we got down the stretch here. But Marquette, Xavier, Creighton, UConn, Providence is how it finished out, those top five. Of the five, which do you think has the biggest weakness that any opponent is going to try and exploit the most?
I mean, after this past weekend, I think it's Providence's defense is the first, like, I mean, they gave up the best offensive performance that Seton Hall's had all season without Seton Hall's best offensive player. So, yeah, but the flip side of that is this is not the Providence defense we saw for most of the season. If the team kind of gets itself back together, I don't think we see that defense on Thursday. I think that's an open question as to what team we're going to see, but it's tough. I think every single one of these teams kind of has a killer weakness. And so it makes this tournament so interesting, because I don't think there's any shot that the four teams playing on Friday are the 1, 2, 3, and 4 seeds. Mm-hmm. Because every one of them has a weakness. I don't know which team it's going to be that gets upset. Creighton has depth issues. And we've seen the issues with Ryan Kalkbrenner trying to guard on the outside. We might have a Creighton-Villanova matchup with Villanova trying to expose that yet again. You got a Xavier team that is lacking depth right now. No Zach Fremantle. And I mean, we've seen Xavier can be the best team in the Big East when it wants to be. And then they'll drop some games that they just should not. Xavier might play a DePaul team that it lost to in the first round. DePaul gets through Seton Hall there. The Seton Hall team that just looked better the last time it played. So I don't think it's a guarantee that Xavier even gets out of that game. And Marquette here, I think, has a brutal draw in that the Golden Eagles have to play a team they just played this past week, whether it's Butler or St. John's. And then they're either going to have to play a Providence team that just managed to beat UConn, or a UConn team that has played like a top four team in the country for 3 out of the 4 months of the year. And Marquette has issues with rebounding. I think it's a St. John's team that can take advantage of that. I think it's UConn and Providence team that can take advantage of that. So we'll see. And UConn, I mean, do you get the team from January, or do you get one of the other months out of them? Who knows?
So what you're saying is we have a great conference and this should be a fun one this week.
That's I just wanted to say that I spend about 20 minutes researching my own question, and you just said all of that off the top of your head. So very, very well done. But that's why I asked it. I agree with you that this is probably the worst one seed that you could draw in years.
Oh, yeah.
That is painful on that side of the bracket. But again, you listed off everything I was going to say, and that's why I asked it, because every team can be had. Every team has had one of those type of losses that's just shocking. Is there one that sticks out to you, Pat? The biggest team that you think people are going to circle and try and go after?
Well, you kind of went in my question. My next question was going to be, which of those top four seeds do you think is the first one to lose in it? I'll answer my own question then, and it'll kind of go into to what you guys are going with. And this leads into a little bit how I'm thinking for this tournament. I do think Villanova gets past Creighton on Thursday night. I think they beat Georgetown, and I'm very, very curious to see how things... I think it's a brutal draw for Creighton to get put into the three to go against Villanova. Now, it was going to be rough for them anywhere because they were most likely going to have to draw UConn. Right. You know, of course, Providence is in there as well, depending on seeding. So it's just not a great place to be. We saw what Nova can do to Creighton at Wells Fargo when they really played chess with them while Nova was on offense. Even when Nova went out to Omaha this year, they put in a pretty decent performance and made things close on them. We know the depth can be a problem for Creighton. Now, I think Creighton is going to come out and not allow Villanova to completely just move Kalkbrenner everywhere. That would be inexcusable for them to be able to do so a second straight game. But I think Nova provides enough matchup issues that if I had to pick of the top part of the conference, I think that's the toughest one. And it just happens to align with the fact we're doing a State of the Nova Nation podcast that I think Villanova is a team that can pull it off.
Yeah, I felt a little bit differently because we agreed, Pat, that Creighton game, that Creighton Villanova game was McDermott's worst coach game of the season by far. Like leaps and bounds worse than anything else we'd see all season long. And because it happened so recently, I'm nervous that everything is going into that game plan to prevent what happened to Eric Dixon. 31 points, 6 for 8 from three. I think that was the line. Kalkbrenner's not going to get in foul trouble like he did last time. They're not going to move him up to the 3-point line like they did last time. It's going to take a lot of different things. But as Creighton, you're probably happy because I don't think you want to play UConn.
No.
They're the best team in the conference right now. So you're flipping coins at this point.
Yeah. No, when I was doing my bracket, I don't know if you guys have seen me fidgeting over here. I have a coin in my hand because I was flipping it to make some of these predictions because you really can do anything with these. And that's like, I was doing a little bit of research last night and looking at some previous champions to kind of figure out, okay, what were they like before the Big East tournament? How hot were they coming in? Here, I did this trivia time on our Rose the Garden show. I'll do it with you guys to see if you can remember it. Going into last year's Big East tournament, which Big East team had the longest winning streak?
Ooh, going into last year's?
Yeah.
Was it Providence? No.
No, Providence's last game was against Villanova.
Oh, God.
That's right. Was it Creighton?
Creighton lost this last game against St. John's.
I was going to guess St. John's, but I pulled back on it.
It was Seton Hall. Seton Hall had won 5 in a row.
Was Seton Hall? Interesting.
Yeah. It was one of those things you look back and it's, well, yeah, they were hot going into the tournament, but it didn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
I also look at last year. Providence beat the doors off Creighton to win the regular season title at the end of the year. And then Creighton returned the favor 2 weeks later at the Garden, less than two weeks later.
Beating.
Yeah. And hey, Villanova guys, you know, the Villanova Seton Hall go back a couple of years. They met at the end of the regular season. Seton Hall won it. You go to the Big East Championship. Villanova takes that one. So I'm not sure how much the regular season meeting will actually end up mattering, assuming we do see Creighton and Villanova play in that one. And like I picked Creighton to win the Big East tournament this year. I think they can do it. If they lose to Villanova, it won't surprise me.
I just don't know what to do. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think if you're looking at it from a gambling perspective, the odds there, Creighton's going to get a Villanova team that it already beat this year and likely a Xavier team that it has beaten this year. And all those teams have split. If those are the three best teams on that side of the bracket, they've all split with one another.
Yeah. I think you'd be shocked if the top four seeds make it, like you said. But if it's like Seton Hall, St. John's, I'm also. I mean, shocking, but not my jaw's not on the floor because we've seen flashes of all these teams being capable of beating up the better teams on paper, at least.
I think the only teams we're probably pretty convinced are out of this right now are Butler, DePaul, and Georgetown.
I still don't believe St. John's can put it all together in a stretch, but.
But the first game's against Butler, so they should
exactly. So to your point, there's a lot of variability going into this.
Yeah.
Just to mention it explicitly, I know you said Fremantle is out for the season. How big of a deal is that for Xavier? And flipping it for Nova specifically,
yeah,
Villanova beat this team sans Fremantle plus Justin Moore. that 64-63 win, that big win of the season. So how big of a deal is it for Xavier's defense to miss somebody like Fremantle down in the post, and also their offense? Opposing teams have been able to really take advantage of Jack Nungy by himself down there.
Yeah. Well, you go back to the Big East honors. I think if Zach Fremantle doesn't get hurt, he's almost definitely on first or second team with the way he's been producing this year. If there were a comeback player of the year award and we were including just general performance and not just injury with Justin Moore, I think Zach Fremantle's the guy who does it the way he's bounced back from last year. He's been incredibly impressive. He's an offensive threat. He can knock down threes. He doesn't shoot the three a lot, but he hit like 60-something percent of his threes this year. So missing that is really tough for Xavier. Flip side is we've seen the Xavier team still get some big wins. And I think the interesting matchup is just Xavier's offense against Villanova's defense. Without Fremantle, they have to work a little bit harder. Villanova's defense has turned a corner and become very good recently. And that, I think, is where that matchup, that hypothetical matchup, would be decided. Jerome Hunter's a massive defensive upgrade for Xavier when he's out there. But I think you see that matchup play out, and I think you're going to end up with a low-scoring game that's probably going to be decided on if the other guys for Xavier can actually hit some shots and make that offense work. We saw it happen twice against Providence. I'm not sure how much stock we're putting into how any offense plays against Providence's defense right now with how that unit has looked. So I think it's a Xavier team that is well-equipped to win the Big East title if they keep playing the way that they have. They've been a top 10 team in the country by the metrics over the last 2 or 3 weeks. And what I think that span includes that loss to Villanova. So who knows?
You can use this mantra for every single team in the conference, really, but Xavier has so many different ways to beat you. I didn't feel like Sule Boom had a particularly good game against Villanova. I think he made at least three threes. But I'm just, it's imprinted in my mind, the wide open threes that he missed. And that game could have been easily swung either way by a few more made shots on that end. So Villanova's defense is going to have to be incredibly tough. Colby Jones coming off the performance that he had against Providence too. Every guy steps up. You mentioned Jerome Hunter, who's been fantastic too. They can all do it. All of them can do it. And that's really tough.
And Xavier's weakness this year has been the inability for the defense to win games when the offense doesn't show up. And that's the thing that makes Xavier so hard to predict, because let's say that would be the late game on a Friday night if they meet in the Big East tournament. Let's say you get UConn playing in the early window and you get a lot of UConn fans there, and UConn loses and you end up with a quieter building for the late night slot. All right, a quiet late night game on a Friday night. But Xavier shooters just might not show up for that in a neutral environment, quiet building, different sight lines than usual, all that. And now, okay, well, is their defense going to actually win them a game for the first time this year? I'm not putting money on that finally happening in March when it hasn't happened the first 4 months.
Yeah, the atmosphere would be really interesting for Friday night, because say it does turn into Xavier Nova, we know the crowd will be very pro Nova, just based on how Nova Nation travels to that. Xavier Creighton would be a kind of a weird late Friday night game at Madison Square Garden. Now, as Big East junkies, all of us, I would love it. And I think it'd be a blast to watch, but you know, it's not it wouldn't be Providence. It wouldn't be Villanova. It wouldn't be UConn. It wouldn't be St. John's there. So it's an interesting dynamic. And as you said, it won't have the juice that, you know, a Xavier playing at CentOS would certainly have. So something to watch out for.
Yeah, and this is a Creighton fan base that does travel well. Yes, that's something that has always impressed me at the Garden. I remember the first ever game I covered at MSG was Providence-Creighton in 2017 in the first round, and it was about 50-50 Providence-Creighton fans, which was very mind-blowing at the time. Yeah. So if anybody that's not the teams not in the immediate New York City area, Creighton fans travel the best.
They came to the title game last year. I was blown away by how many Creighton fans were.
There
the
was
title
a good chunk. I remember
year.
That. Yeah. And to Matt's point too, it's to a lot of them. Cause I remember walking around the Garden and you see a lot of blue and white around there.
Yeah. Well, it's the Big East. You're going to see a lot of blue and white.
That's
no
true.
Matter.
Fair enough.
There's only two teams. Two teams in the Big East that don't have blue and white. Only one team in the Big East doesn't wear blue.
Oh, I was going to save this for the end, but now you went into it perfectly. I have to talk about the Big East uniform records that you do. And it is one of my favorite things out there. What inspired you to do it? And have you had fun keeping track of all the different records by uniform for each team?
Oh, yeah. It's a blast. Yeah. So One of my like niche hobbies. I love sports logos and uniforms. I got a laptop for Christmas when I was a kid, and one of the first things I did was find a forum online just dedicated to talking about this stuff. And ever since, it's just like a little obsession of mine. But there's a website out there called the Gridiron Uniform Database that documents the uniforms worn in every NFL game going back to like the 1920s. It's crazy extensive. And I was like, hey, I don't have anything like that for the Big East, so let me do it. I started doing it, and I had somebody from Xavier's athletic staff reach out to me to be like, hey, you have our font wrong. Let me send you the file so you have the right font for it.
That is so cool. Wow.
Yeah, that was a pretty cool moment. People love it. And I think it's fun to track. And I actually, at some point, I think once we get into the off season and things slow down, I want to do a bracket for best uniform in the Big East this year.
That'll get so much pull. Yeah.
I'll seed them all by the record that teams had in them, and we'll just have the fans vote and see which uniform teams like the most. I'm curious, which uniforms do you guys like around the conference?
I like the Villanova's pitch blue. I think those dark black, it looks like, with the light blue lettering is so cool.
Yeah, for the Nova specific, I like the 85 throwbacks. Around the conference, I like some of the ones that Seton Hall throws out there with the different blues and grays that they can do. The Creighton pink out that they fully do is like one of my favorite games to watch every year. There's so many good ones across the conference. For the person that keeps them all together, what are your favorites?
Oh, as a Providence guy, the black throwbacks were always a favorite of mine. I love UConn's white throwbacks with the old Connecticut on the front, which I do think we're actually getting both of those uniforms against one another on Thursday. I think what it's looking
perfection
to be. So, yeah, I'm loving that. I love Marquette's gold.
Yes.
I like Marquette's gold, and I like the St. John's red just because they stand out. In a conference with a lot of like navy blue, it's nice to have something different. And the Villanova pitch blues, got to see them in person for the first time this year. And I think they look so much better in person than on TV. Mm. They look fantastic.
You can tell that it's blue in person, I think. On screen, I think it looks black. But in person, you can tell that it's just really, really dark blue.
A number of hours that I spent comparing pictures of different Villanova uniforms, trying to figure out what was black and what was blue. Way too much time.
Yeah.
fair enough.
Yeah, you know, while I have you here, I do have a question. The throwbacks, is that black and yellow or navy blue and yellow?
I don't know.
Because I think it's black. As far as I think it's black, tell,
too. I think it's black, too.
I have it in my tracker.
I haven't seen it up close in a couple years. It feels black. That's the 1970s throwback that you're referring to, that they'll bust out every now and then.
Well, there's two. You use the dark throwback and the light one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, because in some of the pictures in the light throwback, the numbers look navy blue and not black. And I'm like, do you have one throwback that's blue and yellow and one that's black and yellow?
You're more of an expert than us, obviously. So
you're getting us on the colors.
Well, that's the other thing is if you can't tell, what's the point?
Right.
Also that. That's a fair point to go off of.
No, and that's a nice little niche, as you mentioned. That's a cool way to get people involved.
It's fun to do. I enjoy it. Hopefully I'll turn it into something bigger for next season too. It was impromptu in an Excel sheet this year, so maybe I'll figure something better for next season.
Nice.
We're looking forward to it. Emma, you had a question?
I was going to go into predictions if you have nothing else.
That's basically where I was going to, so let's do it.
All right, so you mentioned Creighton, right, Matt?
Yeah, I already gave my... It's spoiled the whole thing already.
Yeah, you're going to double down on it. Tell us why in simple terms here.
Part of it, I just kind of like the matchups there. I think Greg McDermott's a really good coach. I think they're a good team. And Villanova beat him, it wouldn't surprise me at all. But I think the teams are very evenly matched. So flip a coin on what's going to happen. And I like the Creighton team that we've seen. In my bracket, I actually had Seton Hall making it through to Friday.
Oh, wow.
And then playing, Seton Hall over Xavier. You know, I wanted to do something a little bit different. I feel like every pick that I've seen is either UConn Xavier or UConn Villanova in the championship game, and I wanted to shake things up a bit. So I had that, and then if we get Creighton Seton Hall on Friday, I don't think that would be particularly close. I think Creighton takes that one, so that gets them there. The other side of the bracket, I have St. John's beating Marquette. It was not beating Marquette, beating Butler, and then giving Marquette a close game. I have Providence over UConn again because I feel like everybody is picking UConn, yeah. And like UConn's the better team, but mm-hmm. that doesn't mean they're going to win. And I did some research earlier on this. I think every Ed Cooley loss, I think all but one Ed Cooley loss by 24 points or more, which was the margin on Saturday, since the new Big East formed, has been followed up by a win. Like, they always bounce back from those, including one in the Big East tournament last year. They went and won in the NCAA tournament, and they lost to Marquette last season and immediately bounced back and won. So if the team has emotional fortitude, I think they'll bounce back. And it's, again, flip a coin on that one. And then if it's Providence, Marquette, if Providence is playing well enough to beat UConn, I think they're playing well enough to beat Marquette. I have the Providence-Creighton rematch of the first Big East championship that we had in the new Big East, but with Creighton coming out on top.
I don't know if we can even follow that up, Pat.
I know. I can't go with
that. No, that's so extensive. I love it. It's wild UConn's ride this season. That mm-hmm. storyline narrative, people were so in. They were so out. I picked them when they were on that stretch because I still felt like when they had it all together and going, yeah. I'm not sure there's a more talented team in the conference. So that's still my pick. I know that it's popular and trendy now, which I don't like as much, but it's yeah. the worst team to draw. I feel like that's the yeah. unanimous pick. Marquette is crazy good, but I would feel more, as a Villanova fan, I would feel more confident playing them than I would UConn. And I think that's mm-hmm. just an ode to being the best team if nobody wants to play you. And that's how UConn feels as the four seed in yep. the conference.
Yeah. Totally. Which is, it's crazy, which I want to jump in for a second here too. We talked about this on our last show, but who has the Road to the Garden show, but who has the best path or like most favorable and least favorable paths in this. And I said most favorable relative to stuff is Providence. And Tommy said that's the least favorable. And I think you can look at it in either way, because if Providence ends up on the other side of the bracket, they're looking at mm-hmm. a path that's going to involve probably Seton Hall and Xavier as the first couple teams, two teams that they had struggled with this year and just lost to. Villanova, team that they beat twice, but I'm not sure if that's going to happen a third time. Lots of tough matchups. They beat UConn this year. They beat Marquette this year. They beat Butler twice. They beat St. John's this year. And I think there's a coaching advantage there, in theory, at least, for Cooley over Hurley, just based on the history of the two going against each other. So yeah, I think there's that. But at the same time, like you said, UConn's playing the best basketball in the conference. I don't think anybody voluntarily wants to play them.
No.
No. It's all relative. No. That's a perfect way to put it. Yeah, it's all relative based on how you feel your team is going to stack up.
So, Emma, you have UConn in the title game winning it, and who are they playing?
You have to pick Villanova, right?
I think Villanova can beat Xavier Friday night.
Wow. You've said not only Friday night, you've got them winning Thursday night too.
That's, I think, they can beat Creighton, even though mm-hmm. I said it. I think it's going to be tougher than a lot of people think. I think Villanova can eke out one against Creighton. And I think without Fremantle, if Fremantle was in, I would have had Xavier. But I'm going to say UConn over Villanova. But before you pick, Pat, I hate to leave you in suspense, and all of our listeners in suspense here. But as someone who's not as in Villanova as Pat and I are, like, we're so kind of with the blinders on here, does Villanova at all fall into the UConn category that we've talked about all episode? The momentum that they've had over the last month or so, are teams as afraid to play Villanova as we hope they are?
I think it's hard to tell because there's a mm-hmm. mystique around the name,
right?
That I'll say I have experience here in another sport as a Patriots fan in the first season after Tom Brady left. There were a lot of games where it was, hey, you still got the Patriots logo and uniform and everybody wants to beat you, but you don't have the talent to back that up. So you end up getting every team's best shot mm-hmm. and you just can't match that night in and night out, which I think Villanova, you look at the DePaul loss for Villanova, it's a lot of pent up energy for DePaul finally coming out after all that time. And it's just, that happens when you drop from being an A+ to a B+ every mm-hmm. in a season. I think Villanova does have that still, especially because there's good players, very experienced players. I think the issue for Villanova right now is Villanova is playing as well as anybody in the top tier in the conference and not better. And because of how good the top tier is, this isn't like last season where, Villanova felt like the best team coming into the tournament and then played like the best team for all of the Big East tournament except a half of basketball against St. John's. Mm. So
That's scary half, though. Scary half.
Very.
Still scarred.
Very. Yes. But yeah, so that's why it's not one of those where Villanova is going to be favored in everything. It's going to be Villanova is a coin flip in everything. They're as good as everybody. And sometimes he gets three heads in a row or four heads in a row. It's what it would be here for Villanova. And you end up winning it. Sometimes you comes up tails the first time. And it's unfortunate. Villanova's season's at the point where one shot against Creighton on a Thursday could determine the whole season.
It is so true. And I think that's a huge intriguing point for everyone going into this. I have the boring but not often picked. I'm going 1-2. I've got a Marquette Xavier final.
None of us have Marquette. That's such a mistake.
And that's
why
I'm picking Marquette, because I feel many people are overlooking them, understanding that there is a UConn and a Providence on their side of the bracket. I look at the body of work that they've put together all season long, and I'm just so ridiculously impressed with what Shaka's done there.
So
I'm hoping for a Marquette-UConn rubber match on Friday night to decide the series. And then I picked them in November, Emma, so you know I'm going to pick them now. I picked Xavier to win this thing back then, so I'm going to stick with it, even without Fremantle. I think this is Sule Boom Week. I know all of us who follow the conference a ton know how good this guy is. If you are not introduced to him, you're going to see him this week. He's averaging 20 points per game over his last six. I think X cuts down the net. So I think that title game gives you two teams that have never won a Big East tournament before, which would be pretty fun. And I have Xavier winning the first one.
Yeah. Sean Miller doing it all in year one would be insane. But that's prediction segment summed up the entire conference perfectly. I had the trendy pick in UConn, who's playing their best basketball of late. Matt has the best coach potentially in the conference of great coaches. Like experienced team, little depth. And then Pat has the team that was actually the best team in the conference.
Maybe the best team in the conference. It's more of being stubborn.
Continues to get overlooked. Yeah, of course.
Because I picked them in November. Yeah, I can't change it now.
Yeah.
But just so many ways this could go.
Yeah. One thing I will say about Marquette that I think makes them really difficult here is that they kind of have a unique style of playing. And it's day after day after day, which means you're relying on any prep you had previously done for them. Like, you're not going to get any extra prep really to play Marquette. And these teams all know Marquette. I think Marquette has more of an advantage in an NCAA tournament environment because of this. But I mean, that team passes so well, plays offense so well. Does anybody want to be the defense that has to go up against that on less than 24 hours rest with no practice in time?
Exactly.
Like, which is, I mean, I picked Providence to come out of that side of the bracket in mind, but I also look at Providence's defense and the communication issues it has had against an offense like that. And it's like, that's Marquette could blow them out. And it wouldn't surprise me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it sounds like we all have Villanova going to the National Invitation Tournament then, if they will not be cutting down the nets on Saturday. And then, Matt, we have one more question for you before we let you go, because I feel like we would be remiss to mention this. A question came in from the Jerome Hunter fan club. So with you being on, honorary mention, because otherwise we're going to hit the questions after you, because you have given us plenty of time. Was Jerome Hunter not winning Big East Sixth Man Award the biggest steal in the history of robberies?
No. And we also talked about this on the Road to the Garden podcast, because he's in the chat asking. My answer to that is no, because he became a starter at the end of the season. if he was a sixth man, then he's the sixth man of the year. But he wasn't that guy for a full quarter of the season there, and especially the last quarter. I think it's tough, and he's a starter quality player. Mm-hmm. So I do think it's funny. David Joplin won that award with little fanfare. He's been really good this season.
That's where I was going to say is that also David Joplin's a stud. So not a bad pick.
Marquette's got six starters. Xavier's the team that has six starters when everybody's healthy. I think those two are huge. I don't think UConn quite has that. UConn has depth, but they don't have a starter caliber guy off the bench.
Mm-hmm.
Villanova, maybe. I mean, how many deep does Villanova really play at this point now that Justin Moore and Jordan Longino are fully healthy?
Seven you feel the most comfortable with Mark and Jordan Longino, but that's probably where the comfort level starts.
Yeah.
I think Arj is going to play meaningful.
He is going to play. Yeah. I meant he's a comfortable, though.
Yeah, comfortability.
Well, Longino is kind of a sixth starter in some ways. He gives you really good minutes.
Yeah.
And one of the issue for Villanova, I think, is you got six starters. You got as much depth as any team up there. You just don't have that guy. And they don't have Sule Boom or Tyler Kolek or a guard like that. This team misses Colin Gillespie. And of course it does. He was the best player in the Big East last year by a pretty wide margin. I think that was the thing that struck me watching the Villanova-UConn game on Saturday was a couple open shots that Justin Moore missed. And it's not a knock on him. It's just, hey, Colin Gillespie hits those shots. He's that guy that's going to make that. And it's tough to replace him.
Yeah. It's what if this season.
Losing Jay Wright is what gets all the fanfare when you talk about Villanova. And I feel like people don't talk about the fact that Colin Gillespie was so good and isn't there anymore.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. We have mentioned that many times, along with Jermaine Samuels and the do everything role that he did. There was a lot of transition there for Villanova. So while I think they can be dangerous and cause a little bit of noise here at the Big East tournament, the conference is so good. It's such a hill to climb with them playing on Wednesday. So they got to do 4 wins in 4 nights. It's a tough ask.
It's not as much of a hill Wednesday night, but yeah, it's still a game you got to see before.
Yeah, yes. Seriously.
Hey, you could be the answer to a trivia question. Who was that? Was the last game?
No. Oh yes. I thought I thought you were going to say who did Georgetown beat in the Big East tournament.
No. Last game Patrick Ewing ever coached? That could be
that would be nice.
Not only
I think most people would appreciate that. Actually,
I think that's what it will be.
Yeah.
Villanova is just 1-5 against Georgetown in the Big East tournament all time.
Oof.
I had to double check that a couple times looking at it. Of course, most of those come, I think there's back to back 07-08 or 08-09, a pair of losses, and then I think one in the 90s, one in the 80s, or 180s, 170s, something like that. So most of that's old from when Georgetown was Georgetown.
Yeah, exactly. So I think all of Nova Nation's hoping that'll move to 2-5, pleading that will go to 2-5.
If it doesn't, I'm not even sure about nationally invited at that point.
It's over. It's over at that point. Matt,
thank you so much for coming on. I was just, my last comment here is I think this conference has been lauded for its big man play all season long, but I think we're going to see some serious guard action here in the Big East tournament. You've done such a good job highlighting all of those big players.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. I mean, hey, it seems like every team has a good big man. So the differentiator is what can you do on the wings? What can you do in the guard room?
Absolutely. And we will see it all play out Wednesday through Saturday. But Matt, thank you so much for coming on. Tell everyone where they can hear more of you, read more of you, so they can stay up to date with you.
Well, I write and talk over at Road to the Garden. That's at Road to the Garden on Twitter with the number 2 in there. You can follow me on Twitter at Matt St. Dream, MattStDream. I'm assuming there's not going to be a lot of listeners here that want to listen to Providence-specific content, but if you do, there's the Flex Hoops, where I do a podcast covering the Friars. And if there's any Patriots listeners, I do a podcast. It's formerly for Pat's Pulpit. SB Nation has cut down on some of the podcast stuff, so we're moving somewhere else now, but I will be continuing that. So any of those places, you can find me. And cover the whole Big East. So if you want a wide-angle lens on what's going on at the conference with a little bit of a Providence bias, then I'm your spot.
My mom's all in for that. She's going to be psyched listening to this.
Perfect. But obviously runs the gamut. We appreciate the time you spent with us here, and let's have an awesome week at the Garden.
Thanks for having me.
So once again, Matt, thank you so much for coming on. Pat and I were blown away the entire time about how much knowledge he had on the Big East Conference, current and past, obviously. But I keep coming back to it. I was laughing to myself the entire time because the big takeaway for me is that nobody knows what the hell we're talking about. Because something could happen that could totally shock everybody, but you shouldn't really be that shocked. Or if it does end up being 1-2, like you said, Marquette Creighton, that would be kind of what I think too.
Yeah, as you saw, a lot of variance in the finals that all three of us gave and in our champions. So it really does display how talented this conference is top to bottom and the amount of things that could happen as we go into the week.
Yeah, I'm so excited. Pat and I will be there. Tommy mentioned early last week, I believe, that he'll be covering the whole tournament with Matt for Road to the Garden. Eugene will be there. There's going to be a whole lot of representation. Chris Notaro even mentioned if Villanova makes a run, he might make his way up.
Come on out, Chris.
Full 40 squad will be there. There's going to be a lot, and hopefully for a long Villanova run here. I can't wait.
We can only hope. I know we both had it. You had them getting a Saturday. I'm confident.
It's gonna be a risky pick. If it happens, I'll be really happy with myself. if it doesn't. I just think they've done enough to prove that they can hang. And so often in these games, it comes down to one shot. We know that Villanova is going to play it close with anybody that they play. But I just think they have the chance without Zach Fremantle to make some magic happen. And I do believe in UConn on the other side.
If they get to Saturday, anything can happen. The question is, can they? They should be able to get past Georgetown. That's why we're not focusing on it that much. Creighton, as we discussed, I think they're going to make some big adjustments, and this is not going to be the same Creighton team you saw at Wells Fargo, just about 2 weeks ago. And, you know, a very difficult potential matchup if they were able to get past Creighton against Xavier or, who knows, maybe a Seton Hall. So It's a tough run-in for sure, but we know the Cats have put together some momentum over the last month. Does that carry over the next couple days?
Yeah. To put it simply, to state the obvious here, Villanova is going to have to play its best basketball this season to go up against the 2-3 in the conference. It's no easy task. I think they're capable of it. If it doesn't end up happening that way, again, nobody's going to be stunned. But you know me, Pat, I'm trying to be positive. I'm painting the spin here. Not that you're being particularly negative.
I said they'd beat Creighton. I didn't say it was a one and done for them. So I think look at that as baby steps
both
for me.
We've got some optimism here.
Yeah, exactly.
100%. You've been good all season long, actually, to give you some credit here. You've been positive, optimistic, especially as Villanova went on that run there, 6 of 7. I think spirits were high for us.
You hear that, Tommy? I'm not always the Grim Reaper. Also, though, before we get into the question, shout out to Matt, also class of 2020. Always got to respect.
Yeah, it was like a kindred soul there. We were finding a lot of similarities with him. And I love that we bookended with Road to the Garden. That was completely
perfect.
Unintentional.
Those guys are great. So super exciting. So we asked Matt a lot of questions. We asked you guys for questions, and you delivered with some. And that's how we are going to wrap up this show here. Our first question comes in from Jared, and it refers to kind of Kyle Neptune and the offense. He refers to Kyle Neptune often discussing how they don't really worry about offense and making shots, but then discusses kind of how this team can go stagnant at times. Do you believe it's more of they don't have to focus on trying to fix things on offense and the game will just flow to them? And if the shots fall, the shots fall. Or do you think there's more of an issue with it?
Yeah, I kind of feel like this whole point originated when Villanova's defense was the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And as the defense has gotten better, it's been able to win games for them. So now people are finding another thing to focus on. And I'm not saying that that's a bad thing or the wrong thing to do. It's the obvious next step because the defense has shored up some serious issues and now we can worry about the offense. That's a very logical thing to do.
Sure.
But yeah, there's obviously a dichotomy there. We've languished about the lack of assists all season long, especially when you compare them to a team like Xavier or Creighton or Marquette, who lead the conference in assists per game. It's going to be difficult when it comes down to it. These guys are either going to make their shots or they're not. Against UConn, they didn't make their shots and they looked terrible. Against Creighton, you saw them look the best they have all season. So unfortunately, I think it's going to just come down to how good they are shooting that night. I don't think it is realistic to think that the game plan is going to change for the last potentially 4 games of the season.
It's a very real concern. It's one I've voiced many times this season, that the ball just hasn't moved enough for Villanova on offense, and that was the case on Saturday. It is certainly something to pinpoint as they go into the tournament and say, can they run this offense in a way that puts them in better positions to make shots rather than forcing them into the very difficult jumpers that for stretches of the season we've seen this offense settle for. So I think it goes further than just off they fall. They need to work on finding ways to put themselves in some better spots.
Yeah, I guess to further that point, it's just that we're not going to see them shoot less threes just because the looks
probably not.
They haven't done that all season long.
Probably not. A question comes in from Nick, which we probably answered, but here you go. Can the Cats be in contention for an at-large bid without winning at all? If so, how far do they need to go?
Nope. Win it all or nothing.
It is all or nothing. They have to be all in and cut down that net on Saturday.
Yep.
Otherwise, you will not be seeing them in the NCAA tournament. Question comes in from Danner Zone. Do you think the end of season performance, and going to rope in a potential Big East tournament run, will affect Neptune's ability to recruit next season?
This is a really good question, actually. And it made me think, because I think you can attribute this run to Justin Moore's return and the full health of Villanova. If you're doing that, then you're saying that when Villanova struggled, it was because Neptune wasn't working with his full roster at full health. That sounds like a very logical thing to think. It's obviously not so easy to do when we're in the midst of it. So I think my hopeful answer is that it shouldn't matter. It's nice to see Villanova have some success. Obviously, winning cures everything. Mm-hmm. I'm hopeful that the portal would have been pretty robust anyway, because I still believe in the Villanova brand. And, you know, we can go back and forth about the recruiting this year, but I'm also hopeful that that will pick up just as Neptune establishes himself in the college basketball sphere.
I think the winning season, if that's how the record does end up, now there's no guarantee of it, of course, with how games play out, but they should end over 500, certainly helps to be able to point that they were still able to do that. You know, you can look at some of the wins they were able to pull out towards the end of the season here and say, okay, you know, they do have it in them. So, yeah, I think it can impact and play in a little bit. I'm not sure how much, because still with recruiting, it's all about, is this a good fit for the player and the program moving forward? But what at least this shows what they've done lately is it's not as if this is an absolute dumpster fire of a situation that you're going into. And it never was, though some people may have made you believe that if you read their comments on Twitter. Totally. But I think that's the key thing, is to show that there is some growth here. This is Villanova. This is a program that is very well established. I think they're going to be okay regardless, but the end of season push helps a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. And also, regardless of the coach, they're still finding the perfect culture fit, personality fit, key in the cog, as opposed to the superstar that's going to leave the team. That's never mm-hmm. going to be Villanova's way, regardless of who's the coach of the team.
Absolutely. And we finish things up, as always, with our man Jerry Quinn. Three questions from Jerry. Who needs to step up and play better for Nova basketball to play on Saturday at the Big East Championship?
Feels like a different guy every single time, right? Pat, you take this one first. I'm passing to you.
Caleb Daniels. They need him to break out of this funk. We saw some signs of life, and then it was another rough one against UConn on Saturday. They need him to be smart on defense. They need him to give them a three-point outlet to be able to hit some of those shots, and they need him to not turn the ball over. I think Caleb is going to be really key here. If Villanova is to go on a run, I need to see improved play from him, because they need that supplement and that extra push from him.
Yeah, I think that's the big answer there. I think saying Brandon Slater offensively, at least at this point, is probably a ship that has sailed.
I would agree.
I'm not saying this because he's been playing bad of late. I actually think it's exactly the opposite, but I'm going to predict that Mark Armstrong is going to go for the hat trick here against Georgetown the third time out. Let's get a little momentum going for him here that hopefully he can carry into Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Let's take it all the way for Mark. And of course, it's going to be ignited by Georgetown, because that's the best basketball he's played all season.
I love it. You know, this is a very pro Mark Armstrong podcast. So yep. all for it. Question two, what time are you both showing up at Stout on Thursday?
Oh, he knows. I went to American Whiskey last year. We both did.
Pat. We both went to American. It was good. I liked it there.
It was good. My friend Kelly and I, to this day, take credit for opening that. We went to that bar randomly and ended up turning into a Villanova bar. That's Everybody true. Showed up there. That was where a huge Villanova grads our year went there too. So I might be going back there. But you obviously have to make an appearance at Stout.
Yes, and even with that, when I went to American Whiskey, I came from Stout.
I remember
there.
That.
Yes, exactly, with some of my crew. So, yeah, well, I'm sure we will be at Stout at some point. We'll just be around the garden. I took off from work on Thursday and Friday, so just to get the full Big East tournament experience. So I am quite excited, and I'm sure I'm going to get to see plenty of you guys there.
Yeah, I'm super excited for that.
Yeah, and then third question. New York City recommendations as he brings his aunt to her first Big East tournament.
I hope his aunt isn't trying New York pizza for the first time, because if that's the case, Jerry and I are going to have to take it out to a side room to discuss some options. But I'm just as excited for New York pizza as I think I am to watch basketball,
of course,
over this next week. So those are the spots that I'm looking out. Did you have anything specific in mind, Pat?
Well, I mean, the most important thing is just that it's the first Big East tournament. So just enjoy Madison Square Garden
so
and the beauty of it, especially as they've redone it over the last, 5, 10 years. It is absolutely gorgeous and state of the art now. You know, if you're looking for pizza, me personally, to not start a war with you being on here, I love John's either in Times Square or Bleecker Street, are two phenomenal places to go grab a slice. You want to be a little touristy in New York, you know, there's always the Empire State Building, Central Park, things like that. So you just really need to step out on the streets and you get to fully experience New York by looking up and seeing the gravity of that situation and the magnitude that that city brings. So it'll be awesome.
Yeah, I hope the weather's good. I actually haven't checked. I hope we get some sun. Maybe some,
we can hope.
Some warm weather like we've had over the past few days. That would be nice. This is underrated, and I know how spoiled I sound saying this, but I'm actually really excited to watch Villanova play Georgetown on Wednesday in person, because I think it's going to be a little bit lesser of a crowd. I got better seats than I ever could have dreamed of getting on a Friday or Saturday, which is what we're used to for Villanova. So, of course, I would have preferred Villanova to not be the sixth seed, but to see them play on Wednesday, I'm actually pretty excited. I'm going to be closer, like I said. I feel like I'm going to get more of the MSG experience. And then after that, it's going to be on the grind, Villanova just getting as many wins as they can.
That's the hope. It's going to be an awesome, awesome trip. I can't wait to make the pilgrimage back to New York later this week and then into Manhattan for the Big East tournament. So it's our favorite time of year. It's the Big East tournament is personally my favorite sporting event to attend in person every single year. This is going to be awesome. The atmosphere is going to be great. And Villanova's got a tall task in front of us, but we all know what they have to do. So the stage is set. It's the best stage in the world to be on. Let's play some basketball.
I'm getting chills just hearing you talk about it. The days are long, the weeks are long, but the season flies by. We're already here. The regular season is done. And this is where it counts. All or nothing, going off of Nick's question. All or nothing here. They've got to go out and do it. It starts Wednesday. I'm sure they'll be preaching all week long that it's one game, one possession at a time. Because that's Villanova basketball, Pat. We're going to finally see it on Wednesday night and see what they can do.
This is March. We are here.
We're here.
We are here. And before we fully wrap this thing up, shout out to the Villanova women who take on UConn women in the Big East championship game on Monday night. While we record this, we do not know the result of this game, but we know that Denise Dillon has taken the squad to back-to-back Big East tournament title games for the first time since, I believe it's 86-87, might be 85-86, but I think it's 86-87. We know she's done a wonderful job. Maddie scored 37 against Creighton on Sunday night in the semifinal. Go Cats. And take home a Big East title.
Well, that'd be awesome. Yeah. We scheduling wise, we weren't able to make both happen. But yeah, when this comes out, we'll obviously know the outcome. But what a season regardless. They move up to 10, which is their highest ranking also in however many years. Just a wonderful, wonderful season.
Regardless of what happens, they're going dancing. And so can't wait to follow them through this as well.
With big expectations. With way big expectations.
Like you said, number 10 team in the country right now.
Yeah.
And the National Player of the Year. We are all on that hype train. But all right, that'll do it for us here on the State of the Nova Nation podcast presented by VU Hoops. Be sure to check out VUHoops.com for all your Villanova content all season long. Follow the show on Spotify. Subscribe to us on iTunes and follow us on Twitter at SONNPod. This is, as planned, our only show for the week, so we wanted to give you a big long one here for the Big East tournament preview. Hope as many of you as possible get to New York and get to the Garden for what will be an amazing week as always. Hope to see some of you guys there as well. We will be back at it at some point. See if Villanova can make a run. And Nova Nation.